Good afternoon. This is the Chorus Call conference operator. Welcome, and thank you for joining the DiaSorin First Half 2013 Results Conference Call. After the presentation, there will be an opportunity to ask questions. At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to Mr. Carlo Rosa, CEO of DiaSorin. Please go ahead, sir.
Yeah, thank you, operator. Ladies and gentlemen, good afternoon, and welcome to the first half results conference call. As usual, I will provide some comments to the main elements of the business and events which happened in the second quarter, and then Mr. De Angelis will go through the financials. Let me start with the revenues. At constant exchange rate, revenues in quarter two were in line with previous year, notwithstanding the decline of the vitamin D business in certain geographies like the U.S. and France. I will comment on this later when we talk about geographies. In fact, vitamin D fell in the quarter 9.5%, in line with company's expectations. However, it is noteworthy that the decline, which is primarily related to the price pressure, is softening compared to what has been recorded in the previous quarters. In the U.S., for example, vitamin D revenues in quarter two were higher than in quarter one, and this has not been the case for the last six quarters. Outside the U.S., with the exception of France and Israel and some other minor geographies, the clear vitamin D business is now stable or still growing, like in Italy, Germany, Brazil, or Australia. Let's now focus on the clear non-vitamin D. The clear non-vitamin D business continues to double-digit growth, which has been seen already in the previous few quarters. This is driven mainly by the success of the Liaison XL. We have now more than 850 Liaison XL systems installed in the world. Also, it's positive the impact of all the new products that we launched in the previous quarters. Let's now turn to discuss the main geographies, and let's start from Europe. Europe has experienced a solid growth of 4.4% in quarter two, mainly driven by the two main European markets, Germany and Italy, and notwithstanding the poor performance of the French market. France today is a clear opportunity for the company to grow its installed base because the current consolidation process is moving away business from the small labs to the mid-size labs, which are perfect fit for the Liaison XL. However, due to the size of the vitamin D business in France and its weight on the company revenues, price pressure as well as competitor strategy to go after the send-out business, which has been feeding the Liaison in the larger labs, this has affected the results of sales in France. We expect that things being equal, we should see business stabilize in Q3 and Q4 and see growth again, fueled by the non-vitamin D clear in France starting from quarter one next year. In Asia Pacific, we continue to see solid growth coming from China, 15% up versus last year, and Australia, 37% growth year-on-year. However, in this quarter, the distribution business in the Asia Pacific has been weak versus last year due to a large shipment of products which occurred in Q2 last year and will be more spread out evenly in the four quarters of 2013. Let's move to Latin America. Latin America is growing steadily at 15% in the quarter, driven by Brazil, which is up 22% versus last year, and the export business. In Brazil, the clear vitamin D business is still growing 80% in volume versus prior year, and notwithstanding that, Notwithstanding the fact that the clear vitamin D business makes a minor portion of our sales, it is still very important to stabilize the growth in the country. The Liaison XL platform has been just introduced to the market, and the hepatitis HIV panel just approved by the regulatory authorities. We believe this product line will be the engine to guarantee long-term growth. Also due to the fact that the company already holds 20% market share in the blood bank segment in Brazil through its Nurex product line. Finally, let's move to the U.S. As said, we have seen for the first time revenues in a quarter to exceed the ones of the previous quarter. Q2 revenues were in fact 4% higher than quarter one, as a result of softening of the vitamin D price erosion, as we have discussed in previous quarters and conference calls. In the U.S., the Clear X vitamin D continues to grow mainly in the clinical area of infectious disease, where we see an opportunity to gain leadership with products that have been very successful outside the U.S. in all other geographies. In fact, in quarter two, clear non-vitamin D products represented close to 15% of the total Liaison sales in the U.S., with a growth of more than 20% over previous year. As discussed before, the company has initiated a program of menu expansion that has resulted in the launch of 12 new products in the first half of 2013, of which 6 were approved by the FDA in quarter two, bringing the total number of Liaison products available in the U.S. to 35. Let's discuss now instrument placements. In quarter two, a total of 186 systems were installed worldwide, of which 137 had been Liaison XL. This proved the success of our platform, which is appreciated both in the mid-sized lab and the big labs. In quarter two, we have launched our new Liaison assays for chlamydia trachomatis. It is 2 products. This is a specialty infectious disease product not available on any other instrument from our competitors, which will complement our infectious disease offering and is key to anchor our Liaison install base. Let's now move to discuss our molecular program. In quarter two, 2 new assays have been made available on the Liaison AN platform, the parvovirus assay and the toxoplasmosis assay. These 2 products belong to the infectious disease clinical segment and are key to complete our menu of the Liaison AM to be able to provide a molecular solution to all our microbiology customers who are currently already using our traditional immunoassay products. Let me remind you, for example, that parvovirus is a flagship product for the company, and we have reached a leading position worldwide after the acquisition of the Biotrin product line. This new molecular product is intended to go to the existing customer base to strengthen our position as leader in the field of infectious disease. So far, roughly 30 Liaison AM systems have been placed with customers mainly in Europe and I will now turn the podium to Mr. De Angelis. He will comment on financials, and then we will open the Q&A session.
Thank you, Carlo. Ladies and gentlemen, good afternoon. Let's start having a look at the income statement. I will not spend too much time on the revenue trend because Carlo already did it deeply. Let me only remind you that in the first half, revenues were 219.7 million euros, in line with previous year at current exchange rate, and up to 0.7 at constant exchange rate, and that molecular business contributed for 1.7 million of euros to the total turnover. When we look at group marginality, it's worth mentioning that the revenue trend in the second quarter and in the first half were accompanied by a strong performance of the economic margins in line with our expectations. gross margin in the first half summarized to 1,151.9 million euros, with an incident on the revenues of 69.1%, in line with last year. If we look at OPEX in the semester, there was an increase of 4%, mainly as a result of the cost incurred to support the launch of the new molecular business. Let me now explain the numbers behind the other operating expenses registered in the second quarter for 3.1 million of euros and in the first half for 2.6 million of euros. These costs are mainly related to the exchange rate fluctuation occurred in the period. In fact, in the second quarter, the euro appreciated 1.9% against the United States dollar, 19% against South African rand, 7.3% against the Brazilian reais, and 4% against the Australian dollar. In the first half, the euro appreciation was equal to 17.7% against the South African rand, 10.5% against the Brazilian reais, and 3.2% against the Australian dollar. This trend of exchange rate resulted in a negative impact on EBITDA level at 1.9 million of euros in the second quarter and 0.6 million of euros in the first half. On top of this, EBITDA was influenced by the operating expenses related to R&D and to the creation of a dedicated sales force for the molecular business, which accounted for 1.8 million of euros in the second quarter and 3.6 million of euros in the first half. As a consequence of this, the EBITDA margin in the second quarter was equal to 37.1%, but 39.1% when excluding the molecular business. The remaining negative difference of 70 basis points versus the second quarter of 2012 is explained by the negative fixed headwind in the quarter, as already commented before. In the first half, the EBITDA margin was equal to 38.2% and 40.1% when, excluding the molecular business with no material impact, driven by FX headwind when compared to the first half of the last year. Let me now spend some words on the taxation of the second quarter, which affected negatively the net profit. In the second quarter of 2013, the higher tax rate was due to non-deductible tax withholding calculated on a greater amount of business received by the group's parent company when compared to the last year. As far as the semester is concerned, there is not a material difference in comparison. On top of this, the net profit has been affected by negative headwind on fixed exchange rate already commented before, totaling in the second quarter 20.5 million of euro and in the first half 41 million of euro, which is close to 19% of the revenues. Moving to the balance sheet at June 30th, the net capital employed amounted to 322.8 million euros, with an increase of 5 million of euros when compared to the beginning of the year, mainly due to the increase of the net working capital. This was due in particular to the higher trade receivable and inventories, partially offset by the change of the current assets and liabilities. The increase in trade receivable of 7.3 million euros reflects the good performance of revenue, in particular in Germany, Italy, and Brazil, while also reflecting the deterioration of payment performance in certain European markets. The increase in inventory of €2.1 million is due to the higher inventory of semi-finished products in the production sites of the group for products whose launch is expected in the coming months. In the first half 2013, once again, DSR registered a very solid net financial position, equal to €56.8 million, net of the payment of €27.2 million in ordinary dividends, which with an improvement of €9.6 million from December 31st, 2012. This increase reflects the significant cash flow generated from operating activity in the semester, equal to €37.4 million. It is noteworthy that the second quarter of 2012, the company had received a payment of €9.6 million from the Spanish public administration as a settlement of trade receivable for previous quarters. This payment not yet occurred this year and is scheduled for the second half of this year. Last but not least, let me conclude confirming that our strategy is working across all the products menu, and for this reason we are comfortable in confirming the guidance for the full year 2013, both in terms of revenues, EBITDA, and Liaison and Liaison XL system installment.
Thank you, Pierluigi. So now we open the Q&A session.
Excuse me, this is the Chorus Call conference operator. We will now begin the question and answer session. The first question is from Romain Zana of Exane BNP Paribas. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good afternoon, gentlemen. Three questions, if I may. The first one on aldosterone. Could you give us more color about the market potential in the U.S. for diazepine, as well as the medical guidelines associated to this assay, as well as reimbursement? So maybe this one first, and I'll ask the other one after.
Romain, do you mind just listing the three questions so we decide who is going to take it?
Yeah, sure. Second question actually is on vitamin D. You have guided so far on a 10 million decline of sales for 2013, and according to my estimates, such decline has already been reached in H1. So could you explain why you are confident on a sharp stabilization in H2? And the last question is on the EBITDA guidance, which implies basically roughly 7% growth of EBITDA in the second part of the year. So I was wondering what are the main drivers that should support the expected recovery. Is it notably linked to the gross margin recovery that we've seen in Q2?
Okay, let me start from EBITDA and vitamin D. It's very simple. As you said, in quarter one, we have seen a steep decline year on year on vitamin D as expected. In quarter two, we have seen softening of the vitamin D decline, and then we expect that in quarter three and quarter four. Still some decline in order to get to the 10 million that we've indicated. By the way, we are not there yet. We are close, but not there yet. Therefore, the weight on, on the decline, the weight on the growth of companies for the vitamin D decline will decrease, allowing then all the other product line, which now are contributing double-digit growth, then to express full potential. So if you do the calculation, starting from the current EBITDA level and going forward, making the revenue, full year revenue that we've indicated on the guideline, and calculating an EBITDA margin in line with what we have seen in quarter one and quarter two, you would get, in fact, to the 170-ish EBITDA, which is what we indicated in the guidelines. So you do not necessarily need a margin improvement what you need is that stabilization of vitamin D, and then the drive so that the rest of the growth, which is already happening, can be a positive contributor. As far as vitamin D, I think I already answered and said, yes, the vast majority of what we said we're going to lose or estimated we're going to lose in Q1 in the year already happened in quarter one and quarter two. Not there yet, but again, most of it is gone. Most of the hit was taken in Q1. Quarter two was better, especially, in my opinion, the positive indication here comes from the U.S., where, as I said during my comment, is the first time in many quarters where one quarter is better than the previous one. And again, this is all, since a good chunk of our U.S. revenues coming from vitamin D, this is related to the fact that we see that the erosion and the effect on the price concession we gave in 2012. This effect is softening, let me say. So we are cautiously positive about the quarter three and quarter four. As far as Aldoctor, listen, we can spend an hour on this one, but let me just make it clear to you. As far as the U.S. is concerned, the existing market potential, as it is in terms of the use of aldosterone and renin and the ratio between the two, in order to diagnose primary aldosteronism, the market potential is fairly limited as we speak. We estimate something around $5 million. However, the problem in the U.S. is that the clinical practice is not using these as a tool for diagnosis, which would be a great help, because as you understand, hypertension is becoming a chronic issue in the U.S. market. So sales development here are related, let me say strategic sales development behind the $5 million are more related to the fact that we work with the medical community, which is what we are doing right now, in order to develop guidelines which recommend the use of the ratio between Aldo and renin in order to manage, diagnose and manage the hypertension. Is a long-term project. However, it does have great potential, and also reimbursement today for renin and aldosterone in the U.S. is very high, and so it would allow positioning of pricing in the U.S. Which is high. The third element, which is interesting, is that with the exception of IDS, which is a relatively small competitor of ours, worldwide aldosterone and renin are not on the map of all the big guys like the Roche, Siemens and Abbott of the world, and that clearly is taking away a lot of pressure on one side. It is allowing us to, as we did in Europe, develop a market and then work on the demand. Sooner, if this becomes, I'm anticipating your next question, what if this becomes all of a sudden a big market? Do you guys have any IP to protect it? No, we don't. It's not an IP issue. However, in this case, again, is aldosterone is a very complicated assay to develop. We develop a reagent which is unique together with a collaboration with a UK firm. And I believe the barrier of entry to the market, if this becomes interesting, is going to be high. But we don't have any IP protection on this.
Okay. Thank you very much. And do you expect it to be a significant growth driver in the coming years, or it will take a long time?
As I've indicated to you, I think that strategically there are two areas, clinical areas, besides the traditional infectious disease products, where I see opportunity. One is dialysis, the CKD, so chronic disease, chronic kidney disease management. And we have products developed on that, and we have research and development on that, and then is hypertension, where the product already hit the market, and we are working to consolidate first the existing market that we capture through our renin products, selling also aldosterone, this is in Europe, and also creating demand using educational tool for endocrinologists who today are managing hypertension.
Thank you very much for the details.
You're welcome.
The next question is from Massimo Vecchio of Mediobanca. Please go ahead.
Buddy, Carlo, I have a question on the placings in the second quarter. I don't know if you are ready to comment or disclose, but I was wondering if you can go into details between the different kind of customers that are taking the Liaison versus the Excel, size, geographies, if this is if you're willing to disclose that.
You mean the Liaison versus Excel?
Yes, that's the 49 Liaison versus the Excel. It's I'm put it in another way. I'm impressed by the relatively high number of Liaison which are still placed. So I was wondering what kind of labs is taking it and why, and probably there is a difference geography by geography.
I think that there is something you need to understand which may be misleading. We always provide net placements, okay? Net placement means that the net number of systems between the one we place and the one we take off the market, because that gives you growth of the installed base, which is relevant net of cannibalization. So this quarter, in terms of placement of Liaison, is not so different from what we have seen in previous quarters. And typically, all these Liaison, they do go to Asia-Pacific, mainly China, where there is still a very interesting growing customer base of mid-sized lab that they can take the Liaison. In China, we have also launched the Excel. Now we have 12 Excel placed, and we have lots of hopes and expectations on the success also of the Liaison Excel platform. But again, mainly the Liaison today goes to Asia Pacific. Today we have 400 Liaisons installed in China. Placement rate has been traditionally between 70 to 90 Liaison per year, and we continue to see that. To a point that very recently we have agreed to extend for 4 more years life of the Liaison, signing up an additional contract with the current supplier to allow us to access the Liaison platform for this market for the foreseeable future. As far as the Liaison Excel is concerned, the 130-140 system per quarter is what you have seen that we have done also in the past. The install base is primarily going to Europe these days and the U.S. Europe, as you have seen from the numbers, Europe is doing very well for us. 4.4% growth in the current economic environment is extraordinary. The main drivers, again, are Italy and Germany, that are taking lots of Excels, as well as France. The problem is that, unfortunately, it is frustrating. In France, you see a net negative impact due to the fact that vitamin D really started from a very high number and is falling down, but there is a build-up of the Liaison Excel install base also in that territory. I hope I gave you the right split.
Yes. In China, you are direct in some areas, but you still use distributors in other areas. Is it correct?
In China, we use distributors as everybody else does. It's very typical of this country everywhere. But then we have a local infrastructure of service people. We have a sales manager managing distributors, and we have marketing people. We have over 50 people dedicated to the Chinese market. And the difference is that whereas the Liaison is sold in China to the distributor, for the Liaison Excel, we decided to use a different strategy because of the relevance of the platform strategically. We are not selling the Excel to the distributor, we are placing the Excel to the customer. we are servicing the Excel ourselves, and the distributor is the one that is managing the reagent stream, so revenues associated with the reagents. As far as China is concerned, just one thing which is very relevant, we expect by year end to get approval of the full hepatitis and HIV line. And this is extremely relevant for us because the Chinese market for hepatitis is huge. There are over 200 million chronic hepatitis B patients in China, and we expect that going forward, our infectious disease footprint, which is the one we built around the TORCH and prenatal disease testing, will be further incremented using the hepatitis opportunity. So China, we have a short-term and long-term strategy because we have there's a whole new product line that we expect to be approved by the authority by December that then will continue to fuel growth going forward.
Thank you very much. Very useful.
The next question is from Martin Wales of UBS. Please go ahead.
Hello, good afternoon. Could we start with a simple clarification of your EBITDA guidance, which is at constant exchange rate? What would the implied EBITDA be at current exchange rates? They would hold for the rest of the year.
Martin, I don't know. Meaning that you're asking just to make sure I understand, you're saying what would be the guidance at current exchange rate, right?
Yes, that's precisely right.
Current meaning the first 6 months exchange rate?
Meaning today's exchange rate if it holds for the rest of the year.
I don't have it in front of me, I don't know. We need to do a calculation, it's fairly complex because unfortunately, today we don't suffer from the exchange rate on the dollar side. So yes, because in Q1 and Q2 year on year the dollar has been fairly flat. We expect to see an impact in Q3 and Q4 because last year, if you remember, the dollar in Q3 went as up to 1 to 21, 1 to 22 to the euro. Okay. Year to date, the major impact is related to two currencies where we have significant business. One is the Reais, which, as you know, is on a free fall, and the other one is the Australian dollar. That for us, Australia for us is fairly significant, and these two currencies are getting weaker by the day. So, but again, it's a fairly complex mix, and I don't have an answer as far as how to translate the EBITDA guideline.
Okay. If we talk about Germany for a second, I think you indicated in the press release you'd signed some deals with various private lab chains. Can you give us a little bit more detail on that? And secondly, now we're actually into the price cuts for a diagnostic test that your customers are suffering. Can you just reassure us that you're not seeing any price pressure as a result of that in Germany?
The deal we are referring to is the deal we press released, is the Sonic deal. As you know, Sonic has been on a buying spree in Germany, and so we are really benefiting from corporate deals we cut with Sonic in Australia.
I just thought when you used the word private, which I think you did, private laboratories, you meant other. Obviously Sonic's a quoted company, which
This case has nothing to do with financials. As far as price cuts, we do see tightening of budget, and we do see price pressure overall, not only in Germany but throughout the continent. And this is why I believe that 15% growth in Germany, almost 6% growth in Italy, where the market pretty much has collapsed by almost 4%, is a fantastic result. So we are delivering this result notwithstanding the price pressure that we see throughout all geographies. But listen, Martin, these days... pretty much you see the same effect throughout the world because the U.S. Simply is, everybody is waiting to see what is going to be the effect of the reform. In China, they cut reimbursement on average by 5-10% per year.
Okay, and in terms of your U.S. chemiluminescence business, obviously you've hit your target of 35 tests by the end of the first half.
Yeah.
I think you've stated you ultimately would like to get to around about 50 specialist tests. Any sense of time frame when we'll see the next tranche of test approvals? Because obviously you've had a phenomenal first half in getting tests approved.
We have three tests, I think, submitted, and so we should get to 38 by the end of the year. And then there is another wave of products that we want to target. But some of these are part of a relationship with third parties, so I would prefer for the time being just to keep it confidential.
Okay, and one, just again, another quick clarification. Could you just explain why the tax rate was higher in Q2 versus Q1? I didn't quite catch the explanation first time around.
Tax rate, why in Q2 is higher than Q1? Pierluigi is going to address this.
Thank you.
Okay, the tax rate. Allora, the tax rate is higher. Is higher because we had a different calendarization of the dividends, and in Q2 we got some dividends to pay. We got some dividend from the states, and this determined a higher tax rate. The second effect is this one, that we are having geographic results in Europe. For example, in Italy, who is making more profit than other countries. And as you know, the tax rate in Italy is higher than the tax rate in the other countries. So the geographical concentration of the profit in a country where the tax rate is higher is determining this.
Okay, thank you very much.
The next question is from Mathieu Chabert of Bryan Garnier. Please go ahead, sir.
Yes, good afternoon. Two questions, if I may. Carlo, you mentioned lately that you were open to a partnership with a larger player. I was wondering if you could give us some details on the state of discussion that you are having, as well on the rationale of such a deal for Diaserine. And secondly, it has now been a couple of months since you launched the molecular products. Could you comment on the feedback you are receiving from customers? Thank you.
Yes. Let me just discuss about a strategic partnership. I need to step back one second to explain, to frame this within the current environment. What we have seen worldwide is that pressure is put on the healthcare system to increase efficiency, finally, governments understood that the real way to do it is not simply to put more pressure on reimbursement, but to optimize labs. And you've seen this in France with the current tax incentive for small labs to consolidate. You've seen this, as we speak, in Italy, where in a lot of different provinces and cities, multiple labs are in the process of being shut down and consolidated into one lab. So what we see is that there is a tendency, also in the U.S., which has been traditionally a consolidated market, if you think about the announcement that Quest made, that as part of their strategy to improve margin, out of the 23 labs that they are running, they want to reduce it to 8. So there is a worldwide ongoing process to consolidate labs into what is called in the industry mega labs. Now, mega labs already existed, and typically mega labs today, when they need to select a certain vendor for their routine products, they call the big suppliers, so the Roche, Siemens, Beckman of the world, and they ask them to provide them product offering for, let me say, whatever they can provide, which is 60-70% of the routine test. And then once the lab is selecting the major supplier, then the lab goes and finds smaller suppliers for the product that the big companies cannot supply. This is what has been happening until yesterday. Now, what we have seen recently is that for these big labs, the situation is changing. So the lab goes again to the Siemens, Abbott, and Roche of the world, but rather than asking them to provide only what they can provide, they ask them to form alliances and be able to make an offer for 100% of the testing that the lab needs. That means that these big players are forced to identify strategic partners to do business with, and by the same token, smaller companies like DiaSorin are forced to find alliances with some of the big partners in order to be able to serve this segment of the market. In this sense, strategically, we have been having discussions with several companies, and it is our strategy to select a company that would fit as a strategic partner our view and our interest, and then create a true partnership with this company in order to be able to address this segment of the market. The discussions are ongoing. It is a very relevant decision for DiaSorin because it means we want to select somebody that would be able to first give us the biggest possible opportunity in terms of our product offering, and by the same token, selecting a partner that we believe can be the winner in this particular segment of the market. So, discussion ongoing, and we expect that we will come to a solution to this and selection of the partner by year end, at beginning of next year. We need to be very cautious on this because we are betting on somebody else. As far as molecular is concerned, what we have seen is that, as I've indicated in the previous quarter. This is a market that is much more sophisticated than what we are used to. It's a market that is conducting thorough evaluations of products. And also, because of the complexity of the specimen that is tested and the variety of specimens, quite often they don't have it, so they collect it from the clinical routine. And this slows down significantly the sale process. However, at the end of the sale of this evaluation, you then have a customer with lots of loyalty because they've spent a lot of time in the evaluation phase. We do have now, again, over 30 systems which are placed with customers, some of which are evaluating, some of which have completed evaluations. We have a positive outcome from this evaluation in terms of appreciation of the technology. Work in progress, to make a long story short.
Okay, thank you very much for the details.
The next question is from Andrea Balloni of Fidentiis. Please go ahead, sir.
Hi, good afternoon, everybody. Thanks for taking my question. My first question is about Clia X vitamin D growth. The trend over the last three quarters was pretty strong, plus 19 in Q4 last year, plus 16 Q1, and now plus 11. Pretty strong trend, but looks to decrease. Just want to know if you can give us some more flavor about your assumption for the rest of the year. And since you mentioned during your speech, maybe you can give us also some guidance about 2014. My second question is about Spain and the amount of receivable. Do you have any idea about the amount that you would like to cash in H2? Is something in the range of 10 million like last year or something different? And my last question, I apologize, is about tax rate again. I got the reason why tax rate has increased in H1, but I didn't get the guidance you gave about Fourier. Could you repeat it, please?
The guidance for Fourier taxation is?
We get the guidance on revenues.
No, but what do we expect the tax rate to be? In line with previous year, right? Yeah. Sorry. Again, we never provided a guidance on taxation, but we expect that, with the exception of this quarter, where as Pierluigi explained to you, this is primarily driven by mix on one side, but also by the fact that dividend were paid within the group. And so withholding tax was paid in moving some of these dividends from control companies to the controlling SPA. This is fairly exceptional, and therefore we believe that a 37% tax rate, around 37% tax rate, is what we would expect for the group. Regarding Spain, what we expect to receive in the second half is around 6 million. Remember that in Spain, what happened, and so far in Q1, in the first half, we have collected 2 million. Okay, now what is happening in Spain is very simple. The majority of the municipalities, they don't have the cash to pay for receivables. They receive cash centrally from Madrid. And this transfer of cash happens once a year. So at the end of the story, the Spain DSO is going to be 360 days going forward until something is changing or will change in the way the central government wants to control and handle payments. Nothing to do with the fact that there is a risk associated with this receivable. These are all receivable with the public hospitals in Spain, which are, and the receivable clearly is guaranteed by the Spanish government.
Okay.
Regarding growth of Clia, listen, 2014, we clearly don't discuss 2014 guidance. In terms of sustainability, we expect, as said, that the clear non-vitamin D should continue to grow double digit in the next two quarters, all fueled by UC, the install base, which is growing significantly, as well as the new products which we have launched in the previous quarters.
Okay, so we can assume a growth stabilized in the range of 10 to 12% as shown in Q2?
As I said, double digit is what we expect and what we've been experiencing.
Okay. Thank you.
The next question is from Peter Welford of Jefferies. Please go ahead.
Oh, hi. Thanks for taking my questions. I've got a couple left. Firstly, just on the operating expenses, we saw sales and marketing tick up quite a lot in the second quarter year on year. Now, I appreciate your comments that overall operating expenses are growing relatively slowly. Should we anticipate the sort of trend for the first half to be representative, so sort of continuing slow growth of expenses, or is there something in the second quarter that happened that we should read into for the full year? And then just going on to, I guess, coming back to Martin's comment about the foreign exchange, I think you said that the impact of foreign exchange on EBIT in the first half was about 0.6. I think it was 0.6, 1.9 in the second quarter. If we look at EBITDA, therefore, if we take that 1.9 in 2Q, would it be sensible at this time point in time to assume a similar sort of 2 million foreign exchange impact in the third and the fourth quarters? And then should we use that to try and think about the EBITDA? And then finally, just on vitamin D in France, when could we see the effects there of pricing annualize? So if you give us some sort of idea, I guess, about when pricing started to bite there. Thank you.
Listen, on the exchange rate, I don't want to add more to what I said and to what we have indicated that happened in quarter one and quarter two. As said, I think looking at quarter three and quarter four, there are other elements that you need to take in consideration, which has to do with the dollar. Don't forget, so far we have not experienced much on the dollar. Because so far in the first two quarters has been flattish compared to last year, but you will see an effect in quarter three, in my opinion. But no, I'm not a magician, so otherwise it would be in a different business. As far as OPEX for sales and marketing, there are two effects. One, which is the majority of it, has to do with what we have invested in molecular, which is 1. I think 8 million in the quarter, 3.6 million in the first two quarters. If you compare, this is growth versus last year. This is this will soften if you, in Q3, Q4 versus previous year, because we had the full operating structure in sales and marketing pretty much in Q4, and let me say half of it in Q3. So you will see less of an effect in the next two quarters because, again, by the end of last year, we had the team already in place. As far as vitamin D in France, is a very awkward combination. To be honest with you, I don't think that the major effect has to do with pricing. You know, pricing for vitamin D in Europe has already been put under pressure a long time ago, and now is fairly stable. This has more to do with two effects. The first one has been that we traditionally had lots of volume going through big labs, where we were dominating, and we still have the same accounts in the big labs. However, the viability of competitor assays on a very large install base has drawn volume from central labs. So this has been a volume loss, and this continues, because the French market is, it's true that it's over-penetrated, but it's still growing in volume. So you see more and more volume captured on the periphery by a variety of competitor platforms which are placed in the many, many labs that are still available in France. Let me remind you that in France today, there are still there used to be 5,000 private labs. Now it's down to 3,000, but there is a large number of smaller labs, much bigger number than anywhere else in Europe, and typically these labs were send-out labs where we are not present because we don't have enough, product offering, putting together clinical chemistry and immunoassay to be there, whereas some of the larger competitors do a platform there, consolidating all the lab testing of these small labs. And what we see is that more and more volume is shifting from central to periphery. Okay, the vast majority of this, in our opinion, has been done. There may be still some lingering effect in Q3 and Q4. But it's not price-driven. It's volume going from central to periphery.
That's great. Thank you.
The next question is from Scott Bardo of Berenberg. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you very much for taking my questions. I just wanted to follow up a little bit further on the discussion you had about strategic collaboration. I appreciate it's still relatively early days within the discussions here, but if you could help us understand what this could mean for Diasorin going forwards. I mean, do you anticipate this sort of strategic collaboration being a joint venture or potentially taking some equity share in Diasorin? Perhaps you could help us understand how far you're willing to take such a collaboration. That would be helpful.
Listen, I don't think that this is the right time to comment on this. We are talking about commercial relationships. So we are talking about selecting a partner we can work with in order to provide access to this strategic partner of our Liaison Excel platform in conjunction with their own systems in order to complete the product offering and put the strategic partner in a position to compete with other strategic partners in the very large consolidated mega labs where Diasorin would be naturally excluded. So we are talking about commercial deals.
Okay, thank you. That's a very clear statement. Appreciate that. Secondly, just a very quick question on royalties. You mentioned that you're benefiting somewhat, particularly on the gross margin level, from the deterioration of some royalty payments that you've made historically. Can you perhaps just give us a little bit more detail as to why those royalty payments are falling away and how you envisage that continuing? Thank you.
The royalty is fairly clear. It's vitamin D. We used to pay royalties for vitamin D to the two original inventors, lucky them. And payment was stopped in end of Q1 last year. The other one was in December last year. So starting from quarter one this year, there are no royalties for vitamin D, and this clearly helps in the gross margin at the gross margin level. However, by the same token, let me remind you that there is now a sales tax in the U.S., which clearly goes in a different line, it's not in the gross margin, that is hitting our business. So when you look at, overall effect on profitability, on one side you see the royalties going down, on the other side you see the nice contribution to Obama going to in the opposite direction.
Thank you, understood. So given the strong gross margin development, I think 70% for the quarter, I mean, would you imagine, I mean, I'm trying to understand whether you consider this to be abnormally high or something like a structural achievement that will likely progress going forwards. If you could just help us understand how you see that evolving, helpful.
I have been spending, I think, the last 18 months going around trying to explain to shareholders or potential investors that the big misunderstanding about this company was the fact that vitamin D was an outlier in terms of the profitability vis-a-vis other products that this company is selling to customers. Now, very clearly, we took a hit, sudden hit on price. Let me remind you that our overall vitamin D, overall worldwide vitamin D volume went up year on year, the manufacturing volume and what we have distributed. It was all price driven, the effect that we have seen. By the same token, the clear X vitamin D is going up and compensating the loss, the great loss we had on price of vitamin D. And the mix has been the mix of products that we sell as a clear in the clear non-vitamin D business is a margin that has been able to almost offset the loss that we had when the weight of vitamin D was very high. So to make a long story short, we have also tried, and I hope you appreciate the effort to provide you more read into our EBITDA margin in terms of also the erosion driven by, on one side, what we call the startup company, which is the molecular business, and you see that we try to report, at least from a managerial point of view, the impact of the molecular, and also some read into the exchange rate. Unfortunately, these days currencies are going everywhere in different directions, and because of the weight of revenues in certain geographies, we are affected by it. Now, long story to tell you, I believe that we have a certain profitability threshold of our immuno business that is sustainable, and this is what we have seen consistently in the last few quarters. I believe that it is just for a company like the Asorion to invest some of the proceeds in a new startup, as I called, which is the molecular company, and I give you visibility how much that investment is and what the erosion is. If this is as much as I can say.
That's very helpful. Thanks very much for the detail.
The next question is from Maura Garbero of One Investments. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon. Thanks for taking my question. I'm sorry, I have to go back to this strategic partnership you've discussed before. And I was wondering if you can maybe share with us your thought about the risk of losing the direct relationship with your customers, and secondly, how are you willing to deal with partners that can be also your competitors in certain tests? For example, I'm thinking about Roche with the vitamin D. And a final question is if you can give us more color on volumes on the vitamin D in the U.S., as you gave some indication for France. Thank you very much.
Let me start with vitamin D, and then we talk about the strategic. The U.S. Volume from a market point of view, they are I would say, in general, flat. I would estimate to a small decline. And I'm saying it's very difficult to say because of the variety of different customers we have, the fact that, you know, they're buying each other out, and also there are no worldwide, there are not U.S. statistics related to vitamin D. But if I read what the big commercial labs are saying, and I'm referring to, for example, Quest or LabCorp, I believe they've indicated that there is an overall testing decline that they experienced in Q1 and in the second half, something like 1, 2, 3%. So I would feel that vitamin D being a general, let me say, today a routine test, I would expect that the overall market probably is flat to a small decline. Now, as far as the strategic relationship, again, as much as I can say, we don't intend to lose sight of the customer, because we, and this is why we have ongoing discussions with different partners. The idea would be, again, to combine offering, but the Asorion being the one providing the system to the end user customer, selling to the end user customer through a contract that would include our products within products provided by the strategic partner. In terms of competing products, yes, it's very clear that one of the elements that we need to keep in consideration in selecting who we want to partner with is also has also to do with overlapping menus, a rule of engagement vis-a-vis products that clearly we have and all the strategic partners don't have, but also some of the key products that we both carry on the catalog. And this is why it takes time in order to dissect all these details before we come to a resolution of who is going to be the right partner for this company.
The next question is a follow-up from Romain Zana of Exane BNP Paribas. Please go ahead, sir.
Yes, thank you. Brief follow-up. Just the first one, very basic clarification, but just to make sure, the stable EBITDA expected for 13 is including the 6 million cost associated to the molecular diagnostic platform, right?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. And other question is regarding reimbursement in the U.S. We've seen CMS tightening reimbursement or even recoding some assets. I was just wondering if Dasruin has some exposure to these changes. Thank you.
Sorry, Romain, you mean for vitamin D or for...
All the tests that you provide in the U.S. I mean, are you concerned by any reimbursement changes?
But to be honest with you, as I said before in one answer I gave to one of your colleagues, I believe that the environment worldwide, nothing to do with the U.S. today,
mm-hmm.
is an environment where prices and reimbursement, where reimbursement is cut and prices are put under pressure. No questions about that. As far as the U.S. is concerned, don't forget that with the exception of vitamin D, which was an outlier, today the market is a very efficient market because you're talking about very large private organizations that drive through their labs lots of volume, and they are very sophisticated buyers. This is very similar, for example, with Germany or Brazil. So there is a level of sophistication in terms of negotiation and volume today already reached by the U.S. market, which I don't think can be necessarily affected by reimbursement. I think that the problem is going to be more for the big lab, for the laboratory business, rather than for us, or at least people like us that are selling products that do represent a relatively small portion of the cost of goods for the laboratories.
Okay, thank you very much, and wish you good holidays if you take some.
Thank you.
The next question is from Elisa Corgi of Intermonte. Please go ahead.
Hi, well, you have already answered. Thank you.
Thank you, Elisa. So I can go on vacation.
The next question is from Luigi De Bellis of Equita SIM. Please go ahead.
Yes, good afternoon. Just a quick question. You mentioned it, the volume plus 18% in first half in Brazil. Is it possible to have the weight of vitamin D on total sales in Brazilian market for DIA? And do you see this trend to continue going forward? Thank you.
Sorry. There are, unfortunately, Brazil, like the U.S., is a country where there are no national statistics. So we have no idea whatsoever what the market for vitamin D can be for Brazil. One thing is for sure, it is highly underpenetrated. And so we continue to see quarter on quarter this very strong growth on volume requirements. A couple of months ago when I was in Brazil, one of the major Brazilian weekly newspapers had a full article on what they call la vitamina do sol, so the vitamin of the sun, vitamin D, sorry. What we have learned in Brazil is that it looks like there is an association today is promoted for well-being. And there is a certain number, as you know, of very wealthy Brazilians that are investing a lot in well-being. So a big driver of the growth of the market is also given by that. To make a long story short, I believe that there is still lots to go in terms of vitamin D growth. However, as I said before, the Brazilian market is very sophisticated. Is made of big labs, so the price in Brazil today is already very, very competitive.
Thank you.
Mr. Rosa, there are no more questions registered at this time.
Okay, thank you, operator.